This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Dutch police have arrested a suspect in a shooting incident on a tram that left three people dead and five others wounded Monday. We get more from Reuters' Lauren Anthony.
Authorities tweeted confirmation that 37-year-old Gukman Tenise had been taken into custody. The city of Utrecht was placed in lockdown after the shooting occurred shortly after rush hour. Police conducted raids in several locations as they treated the incident as a terrorist attack. But hours later, the gunman's motive was still unclear. A prosecutor suggested he may have been motivated by, quote, family reasons. Turkey's state-run Anadolu news agency, quoting family members, said the suspect fired at a relative on the tram, then shot at others who tried to help her. Local schools had been urged to keep their doors closed, and security was stepped up at airports, mosques and transport hubs.
Door een aanslag in Utrecht.
Prime Minister Mark Rutte convened crisis talks immediately after the shooting, which took place just days after a lone gunman killed 50 people at two mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand.
That's Reuters' Lauren Anthony reporting. While the death toll is not as significant as initial estimates, Mozambique's leader believes more than 1,000 people may have been killed by a cyclone. We get more from AP correspondent Charles de la Desma.
Speaking to State Radio Mozambique, the president says he believes the death count will be more like 1,000. The Red Cross says that 90% of Beira in Mozambique, which has a population of 500,000, has been damaged or destroyed. The port city has been severely battered by the cyclone, cutting electricity, forcing the airport to shut down, and stopping road access to the rest of the country. The cyclone first hit Beira last week and has since moved inland to Zimbabwe and Malawi. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Find more at voanews.com. This is VOA News. The Pentagon has released a list of hundreds of military projects that might be scrapped or scaled back to free up money for President Trump's southern border wall. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
It's a 20-page list of projects across the U.S. and around the world worth about $13 billion that might be slashed to make way for the border wall. House Democrats say when their colleagues see military plans being scaled back in their communities, it might push them to vote to override President Trump's veto of the measure that would negate his emergency declaration. One example, North Carolina, home to GOP Senator Tom Tillis, where $100 million is planned for water treatment improvements at Camp Lejeune and airfield security upgrades at the Cherry Point Marine Corps Air Station. But Republican leaders predict the veto override effort will fail. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
At least two people have died. 90 others fell ill from food poisoning in Uganda. As a result, the nation has halted the distribution of the United Nations food supplement called Super Cereal. Victims include 12 children younger than five. The World Food Program, which sent the cereal along with sugar and oil to the Ugandan region, has not confirmed reports of the deaths, but it said it treats the situation with extreme urgency. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern says she will do everything in her power to deny a platform to the white supremacist accused of gunning down 50 people at two mosques.
He sought many things from his act of terror, but one was notoriety. And that is why you will never hear me mention his name. He is a terrorist. He is a criminal. He is an extremist. But he will, when I speak, be nameless.
Ardern also said that her cabinet has made decisions about the reform of gun laws following the massacre at the two mosques in Christchurch. In addition, the bodies of all 50 people killed at the mosque will be returned to the family by Wednesday for burial as soon as possible in accordance with Muslim tradition. She said that six disaster victim identification experts have flown in from Australia to help in the identification process. The United Nations panel of experts on North Korea has released a report detailing how the country evades sanctions with tactics such as illegal ship-to-ship transfers of embargoed goods and the operation of front companies abroad by northern government agencies. In it, it says the United States needs to target banks that facilitate illicit transactions for Pyongyang to increase sanction pressure on North Korea to the maximum. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, March 19th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. The DRC government has suspended the installation of the new senators elected last Friday.
Actually, everything started with the result of the election at Kinshasa and in the three Katangi provinces.
Abba Maleka is the former chief of staff of the late Etienne Tshisekedi. South Sudan's Independent Boundaries Commission meets for the first time. Zambia's government is criticized for sending its citizens to work in the Middle East. Thousands risk losing their lives from hunger due to drought in Kenya's Turkana and neighboring counties. And today is the start of official campaigning for Malawi's May 21st election.
From now on, the People's Party president and the entire party, the Malawi Congress Party and its president, will be campaigning together towards the 21 May election.
Maurice Montale is the spokesman for the opposition Malawi Congress Party. And a new report says billions of people still lack access to water and sanitation. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, President Felix Tshisekedi has suspended the installation of new senators elected last Friday. The government also postponed the provincial governor's election. This followed allegations that last Friday's senatorial election was marred by corruption, where some deputies and provisional assembly members were allegedly demanding as much as $50,000 in exchange for their vote. Following a meeting Monday attended by top government officials, including the president of the Electoral Commission, the government ordered the Attorney General to investigate the allegations of electoral corruption. It said the action was necessary to preserve the credibility of the electoral process. Albert Malika is the former chief of staff of the late Etienne Tshisekedi, the father of the current president.
After consultation, the president decided the suspension of the installation of the senators that were elected last Friday, March 15. Second, the delay of the elections of the governors of the provinces, which was scheduled by the Electoral Commission on March 27. Thirdly, the open of an inquiry against the presumed corruptors and corrupt to take them to the competent courts.
I spoke with Mr. Atundu. He ran for the Senate in one of the provinces, but he lost. Yeah. And he blamed his loss on what he called corruption because he would not accept to bribe people in order to vote for him. He suggested even to the point that as much as $50,000 people were asking.
Yes, and actually everything started with the results of these elections at Kinshasa. And in the three Katangi provinces, where UDPS didn't get any seat except one in the eastern Katangi. So out of so far 100 senators that have been elected, UDPS has got so far just one senator. And members of UDPS got very angry and marched and they burned tires because they couldn't accept the fact that despite they have 12 provincial deputies in Kinshasa, they couldn't get at least even one senator and they blame it on corruption.
What are the other parties saying about the decision?
First of all, it brought some quietness in UDPS circles, of course. People are very happy to see that at least instructions have been given to the Attorney General to open a case against corruption so that people who have proofs, like Mr. Atundu, for instance, people who can make their case at the Attorney General's office, and maybe we may have the opportunity of seeing cases being made to the court. But on the other side, which is the FCC, Mr. Kabila's platform, they're rejecting these measures. They consider them as anti-constitutional, and they decide only to respect the Constitution and to abide by the Constitution, which says that it's only the Electoral Commission who can order a schedule. And anybody who has problem with the results must go to the constitutional court.
Well, how do you think this is going to be resolved?
Well, I think there are two ways to resolve the matter now between the two coalitions. It could be either in striking a new deal, in discussing a new deal, to how they're going to go further with completing this electoral process. Either one of the parties can challenge those decisions at before the Constitutional Court.
Thank you very much again, Mr. Moleka. We are always happy to speak with you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, James.
Albert Moleka is the former chief of staff of the late opposition leader Etienne Tshisekedi. You are speaking with me from the DRC capital, Kinshasa. Today, Tuesday, is the start of official campaigning for Malawi's May 21st general election. Former Malawian President Joyce Banda of the People's Party will campaign with main opposition leader Lazarus Chakwera of the Malawi Congress Party. The former president formally endorsed Chakwera at a news conference on Monday in the capital, Lilongwe. The two parties have formed an alliance in the run-up to the elections. Analysts say the endorsement could serve as a significant boost to the prospects of Mr. Chakwera to unseat incumbent President Arthur Peter Mutharika, who also faces a stiff challenge from his vice president, Dr. Solos Chilima. Maurice Mutale is the spokesman for the Malawi Congress Party.
From now on, the People's Party president and the entire party, the Malawi Congress Party and its president, will be campaigning together towards the 21 May elections. And this will mean that we will carry the same message. We are looking at the same vision. We are looking at the same Malawi. So the alliance between the two leaders is for the good of this nation.
Is the former president going to withdraw totally from even the ballot paper?
Today's endorsement of Dr. Lazarus Chakwera means that she is not going to appear on the ballot paper as the presidential candidate. And she has put that very clearly to the general public through the press conference that the two parties held in Lilongwe. Only person who is going to be on the ballot paper and the one that she has endorsed is Dr. Lazarus Chakwera. So it is feasible because we don't have two stories. We only have one story to tell, and that is building a new Malawi.
Looking at the political landscape, what are the merits that you get from this endorsement?
The first merit is that we are doing what people want. People have been crying out there that why can't all the opposition teams come up together, because you are all talking of the same thing. That is merit number one, because if the politicians were bowing down to the will and the interest of the people. And merit number two, you are talking of Dr. Joyce Banda, who is not just a simple politician. She is a seasoned politician, and she's coming with her numbers, and she is going to beef up the campaign of Dr. Lazarus Chakwera and the Malawi Congress Party very well. Now we are consolidating our force against ousting this regime of Peter Mutharika.
There are local reports that say that former President Joyce Banda only endorsed Lazarus Chakwera of the MCP because he promised her that he would not investigate the issue or the controversy surrounding the cash gate. She did not get that same deal when she began negotiations with Vice President Dr. Solos Chilima's UTM party.
That's not true at all. In fact, that is even laughable, because we are not a court of law. We are not the anti-corruption bureau. We are a political party. And Dr. Joyce Banda is also endorsing Dr. Lazarus Chakwera as a political party and a political leader. If there were cases against Dr. Joyce Banda, why hasn't the SB come to her or picked her up? Why hasn't the government acted on it? How can such cases, allegations, be left loose until today? We feel that somebody can only have a case until that case is proven, then she's innocent. So there were no discussions to that effect towards the deal, and that those are not the issues that have built up this alliance. Not at all. We are only looking at a Malawi that is on a sick bed, a Malawi that is bleeding, a Malawi that has been thrown to the dogs. We all want to rescue this country, and that is why Dr. Joyce Banda and Dr. Chakwera have come together to rescue this country.
Maurice Mutale is the spokesman for the Malawi Congress Party. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotte from Mzuzu. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Tuesday, March 19th. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 15 minutes past the hour. South Sudan's Independent Boundaries Commission, the IBC, met for the first time yesterday. The body was tasked last year with determining the number of states and their boundaries before the transitional government of national unity is formed, which is supposed to happen in May this year. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the story from Juba.
Time is running out for the new government to be formed, and one of the toughest issues, the number of states and their boundaries, was never resolved when the revitalized peace deal was signed by the warring parties last September. The Independent Boundaries Commission held their first meeting on that topic, with less than 2 months to go before a pre-transitional of national unity is due to expire. IGAD Special Envoy to South Sudan, Ismail Weis, kicked off today's meeting.
This IBC will determine one of the most important outstanding issues we had in the last HLRF sessions. That's the number of states and the boundaries of the states. And I am very confident that this commission would also seriously take these issues and lead us to a solution that will also serve and contribute to the peace in this country.
Thembisile Majola, an IBC member nominated by South Africa, was appointed the commission's chairperson today. Majola says the Technical Boundaries Commission is nearly finished with its work.
I believe that the committee, as it is constituted today, is ready to hit the ground running, particularly because the TBC has made it very clear that they are about to conclude their work, and that is almost like a relay for us.
Majola says her group will consult widely with various groups of South Sudanese before determining the boundaries and numbers of states for South Sudan.
When we are looking at peace, we need to make sure that we're not looking just for a lull. We're looking for a durable peace in the south of Sudan.
Wei says the process of implementing the peace deal has reached a critical stage.
In May, the pre-transitional period of 8 months is going to be over. So the next is, if this commission cannot conclude his work, what will be next? And then the other question is, we still have in chapter two some of the challenges which are still ongoing. You remember very well, it is very important that we have a trained, unified South Sudanese People's Defense Force. We have not yet even started the training of these forces.
Wei says he is disturbed by what he calls the mushrooming of political parties and armed groups, both inside and outside the country, who were not signatories but nevertheless want to be involved in the peace process. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
At least 9 people have died and more than 1 million are starving following prolonged drought in Kenya's Turkana and the neighboring counties. The counties did not get any measurable rains for close to 1 year now. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the government has released about 2 billion Kenyan shillings to address the problems caused by the drought in the 13 affected counties.
Counties of Turkana, Baringo, West Pokot and Marsabit are the most affected, as the death toll of hunger victims is said to go high if the government does not intervene. Francis Ekutan from Kakwany village in Turkana County told VOA that the relief food delivered by the government cannot sustain them, and that the last time it rained in the area was May last year. Ekutan says the situation in Turkana is worsening daily.
Drought has been here, it has been here for like 7 months. And according to what I know, 10 people already have passed because of hunger. 4 days ago, that's when the county contributed some sacks of maize here at Kakwanya.
Speaking in Nairobi yesterday, Monday, Kenya's Deputy President William Ruto refuted claims that people have died and said that the government has already put in place measures to curb hunger in affected areas. Ruto says the government has also set aside 2 billion Kenya shillings to benefit the affected people, as he urged counties to realign their budgets for emergency responses.
The government of Kenya has approved 2 billion shillings to be spent within this week in water tracking, making sure that food is available, for logistics, and also through the Ministry of Agriculture for the necessary interventions to be carried out.
Food security is among President Uhuru Kenyatta's big 4 agenda, and the drought situation in the country that has made millions starve is an indicator that Kenyan government has failed to deliver the promise it made to its people. The Kenya Red Cross Society has appealed for help to manage the situation. Vinant Degila, operations manager, Kenya Red Cross, says the agency is putting in place measures to ensure the drought situation is managed. He says the government should be putting into considerations the calamity warnings prior instead of waiting for tragedy to strike.
They raised out an appeal which is coming to around 800 million shillings. And in this appeal, therefore, we intend to do a cash transfer immediately for 10,000 families, at least each family to get some 3,000 shillings, to again to increase their purchasing power and their food basket.
Residents say they are forced to travel for long distances to go get wild fruits, which has to be boiled for many hours to clear poison and make it edible. Other counties with high proportions of their population at risk include Isiolo, Garissa, Wajir, Kilifi, Marsabit, Tana River, and Samburu. Mandera, Kitui, and Makueni counties are also at risk. In these counties, food security is expected to decrease in the coming months. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Opposition groups are criticizing the Zambian government for sending about 1,000 of its citizens to work in the Middle East. Last month, Kuwait and the United Arab Emirates officially requested for Zambian citizens to work as drivers and maids in their respective countries. Zambian officials say they have received an overwhelming response from citizens who want to take advantage of the job opportunities being offered by the two Middle Eastern countries. But some opposition groups equate the move to slavery. Nissan Msani is the leader of the opposition All People's Congress Party.
First, we think that it's a terrible indictment of this government, because we already have countries that have withdrawn foreign workers from Kuwait. I think President Duarte in the Philippines is on record to have requested the withdrawal of the penal workers because of persistent and consistent reports of violation of the rights of foreign workers. So we think that the Zambian government does not have a cheap way out of unemployment by opting to send people in an area which has these credible reports of serious abuses against the foreign workers. So we think that the Zambian government has lost an opportunity to create domestic employment in Zambia, because most of the contracts, foreign contracts, have been given to foreign contractors, thereby denying our locals to have employment locally.
Some are saying you are not being fair and pragmatic when Zambians who appear not to find jobs are given such an opportunity to work outside the country, get money to feed their families. You are advocating and blaming the government for such an opportunity given to regular Zambians who need the money to feed their families. What do you say to that?
We have had an example in the past where Zambian workers under the UNIP government, I think in the early 90s, they were taken to Kuwait. I think they were used as human shield during the Gulf War. So we don't want another nasty experience involving our people. And our government is very poor at evacuating citizens. Even as I speak to you, we still have so many Zambian women who are still stranded in West Africa who the government has failed to bring back to Zambia. So we think that unless the government can show that there's a proper contingency plan in place, that in the event that there are these abuses, these Zambian workers will be evacuated back to Zambia. So unless the government comes back to the table and convinces us that indeed the abuses which may have happened to other nationals will not happen to Zambian citizens.
The government has received an overwhelming response from those who are interested in working in these two countries. This is according to the government's report and officials from the government. How do you address such enthusiasm expressed by your fellow Zambians who want to seek such jobs opportunities abroad?
Well, a desperate person would want to take on anything desperate. But indeed, it's up to us to recognize the challenges that they might face. Yes, our people want jobs, but jobs cannot be at the expense of their lives. Jobs cannot be at the expense of their families. So we think that whilst our people are desperate for these jobs, we have a responsibility as political leaders to ensure that our people are sent in areas where they'll be treated with utmost human dignity.
Nessa Msane is the leader of the Zambian opposition All People's Congress Party. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotte from the capital, Lusaka. A new study finds that investing in clean water and sanitation is an economic and social winner, but billions of the world's poorest people still lack access to these key services. Lisa Bryan has more on the findings from the latest edition of the United Nations World Water Development Report.
Access to safe, affordable, and reliable water and sanitation is considered a basic human right and one of the 17 United Nations Sustainable Development Goals governments have pledged to realize by 2030. But there's a big gap right now between promises and reality. The latest UN World Water Development Report finds myriad groups, including women and sometimes the elderly, can be excluded from what many of us consider basic services. Most have one thing in common, poverty.
Water has not been given the priority in terms of development policy that it should be. If you look at electrification, for instance, energy is seen as big business. It's seen as something that is more or less controlled by the private sector.
Richard Connor is the report's editor-in-chief.
Unfortunately, a lot of government leaders, they're thinking taps and toilets. And they're not seeing the true broader picture.
Connor says the bigger picture is that investing in water and sanitation can bring big returns for governments, for example, in healthcare expenses that are avoided because people are less sick. And it helps people get out of poverty. But for many of the world's poorest, those investments are elusive. The report zeroes in on three broad population groups, the urban and rural poor, as well as refugees and internally displaced people.
In sub-Saharan Africa, over 60% of the urban population lives in slums. And for the most part, they don't have access to proper water and sanitation services. They can pay from 10 to 20 times more for their water than their affluent neighbors.
Connor says the urban poor fall under the radar because they often don't pay taxes and aren't counted in official records. But the study finds millions of rural poor, including smallholder farmers, also cannot access these basic services, including crucial water supplies during planting and droughts.
We've discovered that if the small farmholders have access to this water for supplemental irrigation, their crops yields will increase by 2 to 3-fold.
The third group, refugees and internally displaced people, are also considered among the world's most vulnerable. But sometimes the presence of international aid means they can have better access to decent water and sanitation than the host communities. In both cases, however, the report finds these inequalities create tensions. Connor says progress is being made in ensuring decent water and sanitation becomes accessible to everyone. But the report's overall message is it's not enough. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of African news. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, President Félix Tshisekedi has suspended the installation of the new senators elected last Friday. The government also postponed the provincial governor's election. This followed allegations that last Friday's senatorial election was marred by corruption. And today, Tuesday, is the start of official campaigning for Malawi's May 21st general election. Former Malawian President Joyce Banda of the People's Party will campaign with Mayor opposition leader Lazarus Chakwara of the Malawi Congress Party. And that is it for this Tuesday, March 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Colotti and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Botte in Washington saying have a lovely day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an exclusive interview with the Vice President of Malawi, Saulos Chilema. The Malayan politician and VOA's Shaka Sali discuss democracy and the upcoming elections. An in-depth look at Malawi's future on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.